Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, September 30, 2014. Gunfire breaks out at a military barracks in Ye, leaving a number of soldiers dead.
To 14 people being injured and 4 people killed, 4 soldiers.
And hundreds of residents of Kwajok receive free medical care.
I have undergone an operation because I had hemorrhoids free of charge. I am grateful and I will go and tell others so that they can come here and get treated.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Local officials in central Equatoria State's Yei River County say 4 soldiers were killed and 14 others wounded after a shootout between wounded soldiers at a military barracks today. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu has details from Juba.
Santo Paula Suba, mayor of the Yei Municipal Council, says the shooting began early this morning and continued for some hours.
It was the command of the disabled. They disagree upon some other issues. One of the disabled by name Major Akej and Isaac. So Major Akej was being transferred from Yei disabled to somewhere, to Awil. So it was almost 3 months ago. And there's a salary being brought for the disabled to be distributed to them. So it comes that his name was not among the people who will receive the salary. And he became very annoyed. Today, he went without any conversations. He started to load his pistol and shoot the LT colonel.
Among the dead, Lasuba says, were 3 soldiers loyal to Major Akech, the commander who reportedly started the shooting, and 1 soldier loyal to Lieutenant Colonel Isaac, the new commander. Lasuba says that 7 soldiers were wounded during the incident, including the new commander identified only as Major Isaac. He was shot in the chest and was rushed to Juba for treatment. He says the remaining 7 soldiers who sustained major injuries are being treated at Yei Hospital. Lasuba says Major Akech has been arrested and is in custody. He says authorities in Yei County have stepped up security as a result of this morning's gunfire.
We have a joint operation within the town, joint operation comprising of the army, police, and the wildlife, plus the fire brigades. They are under control. They are controlling the town. And we call also for reinforcement from the army.
South Sudan has thousands of wounded war veterans, often referred to as war heroes and heroines, whose main barracks are in Yei. Yei Town is one of the main bases for South Sudan's army, the SPLA. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu reporting from Juba.
The African Medical Research Foundation, or AMREF, has been providing free treatment to hundreds of patients in Kwajok State Capital Hospital this week. Most of the patients who required surgery suffered from anal hemorrhoids. As Santino Monut Ayue reports for VOA from Kwajok, health officials and patients say they are extremely grateful for this service.
21-year-old Achol Yak lies on the hospital floor as she recuperates from surgery because there are no beds.
I have undergone an operation because I had hemorrhoids free of charge. I am grateful and I will go and tell others so that they can come here and get treated.
Yag is one of 32 patients who received free surgical treatment from AMREF at Kwajok Hospital. Patient Ajak Teng, a mother of 3, also recuperates on the floor of the same ward. She says her husband could not afford to pay for her treatment.
I have been operated on because I had hemorrhoids. I had been sick for 2 years, but I could not raise enough money to come to the hospital and get treated because I am taking care of my small children.
25-year-old Bolding underwent the same operation. He says he had been unwell for several years, but this condition wasn't over the first several months.
The sickness started in 2007. I am thankful to AMREF for the services they provided me, and I pray to God that He gives them strength to help others as they have helped me.
AMREF Dr. Samuel Ejek says his organization decided to offer free medical services here because it realized many residents are in dire need of health care.
The meaning for this outreach is that we need to make sure that all patients, those who cannot be able to afford medical bills, are being covered by AMREF South Sudan.
Ajax says all patients who come to the hospital receive pre-treatment.
AMREF team has managed to screen a consultation of 336 patients in Kwajok hospitals. 280 patients have been treated medically, 32 patients have been operated, 24 cases have been treated with mental illness in Kwajok Hospital.
Ajax says to hold speed delivery of medical care next time if patients were screened before doctors and their staff come to Kwajok.
I'm encouraging all the people in Warap State in future, particularly in Kwajok Hospital, the medical directors will be able to make sure that all patients are being screened before team arrive to Kwajok Teaching Hospital.
AMREF priest services were initially scheduled to run from Monday to Friday last week, but were extended through today due to the huge number of patients that have shown up at the Kwajok Hospital. Last month, the same team operated on more than 50 patients, such as hernia, hemorrhage and appendicitis at Kwajok Hospital. For BOA News, I am Santino Manudayuel in Kwajok, Warao State.
South Sudan's parliament unanimously passed a bill to create a special commission to manage parliament's budget. The Parliamentary Service Commission bill is expected to become a law, as we hear from Philip Thornaleu in Juba.
Members of Parliament unanimously approved legislation today, setting up the 11-member body. The commission will be in charge of preparing the parliamentary budget, as well as the MPs' miscellaneous office expenses. Government officials have been accused of enriching themselves with government funds. MP Somazwani Kundu from Central Watori State says commission members will include four from the ruling party and one member from a political opposition party. Kundu says the Speaker of the National Legislative Assembly will chair the commission. He says the bill passage marks a milestone because it demonstrates the parliament's physical independence from the Kiir administration.
The objective of this bill is actually to strengthen and sustain the national legislature and to make it more effective and efficient, being a bicameral system of the government in order to render service and then the oversight role among others.
Kundu says members of parliament will manage physical resources such as daily allowances, operational funds, and other services that require urgent funding rather than relying on the Ministry of Finance, as has been in the past for such items. SPLM MP party member Gony Makwach, who represents Lagos State, says the bill includes the Minister of Finance on the commission, which he says contradicts the intent of the commission.
I thought this commission is a parliamentary team whereby the members of the commission are supposed to be members of the parliament. And I need to be well informed what is the necessity of bringing other members who are not members of the parliament.
SPLM MP Bidali Moses of Central Equatorial State says there is nothing wrong with having the Minister of Finance serve on the commission.
Sometimes we are dealing with financial matters that you need to relate. This is why the Minister of Finance comes in as ex officio. The commission can consult him when he's needed.
Charles Malinga, chairman for MPs Affairs, who authored the bill, says his committee will incorporate some of the MPs' observations into a reverse bill.
As far as this bill is concerned, it deserves to have an independent body to run its functions. That is very central. And we believe without us being independent, we will not have any headway. We will continue to grumble against the executive. Time has come. All of us must have our commission that deals with our affairs.
President Salva Kiir must sign the bill before it becomes law. Kundu says if the president does not sign it within 3 months, the bill automatically becomes law. Kundu says Mr. Kiir may also return the bill to Parliament if he has reservations about some of its language. For BOA News, I am Philip Thornaleu in Juba.
And we apologize for the quality of that audio from South Sudan Parliament. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, an American photographer describes covering the White Army in South Sudan. That story is coming up after this.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
should sports be an integral part of education?
Yeah, I think so, because it helps people, or students in particular, to relax their minds, and that later helps them in class.
Not necessarily. It depends on abilities of children or students. So it's not necessarily that you bring in sports. However, there are other areas like arts, culture, drama, painting.
Yes, it should. I think in as much as we have to be academically stable, our bodies need to be fit. Yeah. So I think it is important that we keep our bodies active in sports in as much as we keep our minds active in school.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our usual Tuesday health segment. Yesterday was World Heart Day, a day set aside to inform people everywhere about the dangers of heart disease and stroke. The theme of this year's Heart Day is creating heart healthy environment. In French-speaking Central African countries, medical experts say more than 80% of people living with cardiovascular diseases do not know it, and the majority die while receiving treatment from traditional healers. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé.
10 patients wait for their turn to meet Fokugang Eric, a traditional healer in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé, who says he specializes in the treatment of heart disease.
Somebody come, he's tired, he cannot make strong movement, he cannot do sport. Sometimes he have pains in the neck, and sometimes there's paralysis, and he will be bedridden. So we have certain medicinal plants that we give.
Among the patients is 62-year-old Njimeri, who suffers from hypertension. She tells VOA that she believes she has been successfully treated.
I go hospital, I work, I buy medicine with a shop, I go up and up. So just give
she
me
says she came to the traditional healer because hospitals did not help her, and rejoices that she has been treated by this practitioner. Medical personnel in Central Africa say many types of heart disease that were traditionally associated with high-income countries are increasing in Africa. Dr. Eloge Yangnini of Cameroon's Heart Foundation says half the population of Africa is at risk.
On a établi que dans le monde il y a plus d'un milliard de personnes qui souffrent de pathologies cardiovasculaires.
He says there are a billion people around the world suffering from cardiovascular problems, and each year there are 30 million new cases reported. He says the situation is alarming in Africa because 50% of adults have cardiovascular problems. Dr. Taju Emmanuel of Cameroon's Cardiac Society says the increase in heart disease is mainly because of the urbanized and westernized lifestyles in sub-Saharan Africa.
Now, what are we doing? We have cars, we don't practice sport anymore, we smoke, we drink. Stress also contributes a lot. As I say, we smoke, we drink a lot. And those things are really contributing factors to the rise of vascular diseases.
Yangnini says those most at risk are Africans who are poor, lack health insurance, and cannot raise the money needed for treatment and open heart surgery, and so resort to traditional healers for treatment. He says Africans should stop the habit of always waiting or looking for solutions to their problems from suspicious sources. He adds that the best thing for people with cardiovascular problems is to consult medical doctors as early as possible. Reverend Sister Gertrude Nkenlefak of the St. Elizabeth Cardiac Center in northwestern Cameroon says this year's World Heart Day theme, creating heart-healthy environments, encourages people to be watchful and avoid the risk of heart failure.
create a suitable environment for your heart, your diet, what it gives to your kids, paste smoking ban in your house. You encourage exercises, not just sitting and watching TV for long hours. Encourage physical exercise, walks, out sports.
Cardiovascular diseases are a major public health concern worldwide and account for about 10% of total deaths in Africa, where they are the leading cause of death in those over the age of 45. The World Health Organization estimates that by 2030, more than 23 million people will die annually from cardiovascular diseases. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Next, we look at South Sudan through the lens of American photographer Tim Frazier. Frazier told South Sudan in Focus web editor Karen Zaivogo that he got himself into a tight spot by photographing members of the armed opposition. Frazier says he was able to talk himself out of the trouble, but says he's worried about colleagues in South Sudan who come under the same sort of pressure.
When you walk into the Rico Maresca Gallery in New York's Chelsea neighborhood, you feel like there are a dozen eyes following you everywhere you go. And yet, there's nobody in the gallery but me. Well, me and the 7-foot-tall images of South Sudanese men, some carrying AK-47s and wearing belts of ammunition, others wearing what looked like simple women's dresses. Half of the dozen or so images hanging on the walls are of men from the village of Yirol in Lake State. Frecia says he drove through Yirol in 2011.
During a time of year when the men come from the cattle camps and literally pose in the street looking for wives, their dinka.
Frecia hung a white sheet from a mango tree in the village and snapped pictures of the hopeful husbands-to-be. Tucked away in a corner of the gallery, one of the pictures stands out.
Because she is the only woman, and I grabbed her because I thought she was striking and got her to stand in front of the backdrop. And just as I pushed the shutter release, a man reached in to grab her and pull her out. It's a pretty fraternal society.
The rest of the pictures were shot during the current fighting in South Sudan. They show
the newer white army as they attacked Malakal. Sometime in February of this year, one guy's got a spear, the other guy's armed with assault rifles, PKs, and that was as they sacked a strategic town.
Frecia embedded briefly with the White Army and also met former Vice President Riek Machar during his trip to Upper Nile State. Taking pictures of rebel fighters or reporting their point of view could get Frecia in trouble with the authorities in South Sudan. Information Minister Michael Makuei has said journalists who, quote, disseminate material of the rebels in the country are agitating the people against the government. But Frecha says even though he might be on the wrong side of the law in the South Sudanese government's eyes, he is not trying to get a political message across with his pictures.
I've had some discussions with people who think I'm glorifying the rebels or glorifying something, and my thought here and my intention is to remove as much information as possible. I mean, one of the points of this collective body of work is to really look at the subject rather than the environment. I mean, to be really honest, I think both sides are equally guilty of inhumanity.
Frecia says he ran into Makuei during a recent visit to Juba.
When the Minister of Information walked up to me in a hotel and asked me if he knew me, if I had been in Malakal.
The American photographer says he talked his way out of what could have been a tight spot. He says although South Sudan is fairly safe for foreign reporters,
I have a good number of colleagues, local journalists, who are working in South Sudan, and they're suffering. They're being intimidated or arrested or even beat up.
The Committee to Protect Journalists, which is an international media rights group, says it knows of at least 10 journalists in South Sudan who have been harassed or threatened with arrest because of reporting they have done since the conflict began in December. For VOA News, I'm Karen Zeitvogel.
You can see the pictures that Tim Frazier took of the White Army and the Dinka villages in Yirol on South Sudan in Focus website. The best way to find our website is to type the name of the show, South Sudan in Focus, in your internet browser. Officials in Western Bahr al-Ghazal state are calling on all media houses in the state capital, Wau, to broadcast only local news. The state's deputy governor, Joseph Zakaria Garang, says the station that chooses to air stories from outside the state are breaking the new media laws signed by President Salva Kiir. VOA fellow Michael Atit reports.
Garang says it is unethical for radio stations to broadcast anything other than local news. He says that any radio station that does not air local news only could be shut down under the terms of the new media laws that were signed this month by the president.
If there is any media house that operates here and doesn't follow ethics, we are going to stop them, and we are going to do that according to the new media law. We don't use force, but we follow the same law.
President Kiir signed three media bills into law around 3 weeks ago. The new laws guarantee the right of access to information, provide for independent public service broadcasts to be set up, and for an independent body to be established to oversee the media and handle any complaints against them. Wau has two local radio stations. One is run by the state government and the other by the Catholic Church. Garang say local radio stations should work with the state government to help develop the local community. He says it does not make any sense for local radio stations to report news from other parts of the country or the world.
The local radio here, they don't care about the local news. Then they're going to broadcast the news from anywhere. That's what we are talking about. Because we want the media here to save our people here in the state. We want them to save the people because it's a local radio.
Edward Terso Loku is the Secretary General of the Union of Journalists of South Sudan, or UJOS. He says if journalists report stories in a balanced way, he sees no reason why the government should restrict their work.
Because the media all the time is supposed to be impartial, neutral. If this is what our radios are following, I don't think the government can have any problem.
Terso says copies of the new media law are not out yet. He does not expect any media house to be shut down before they have access to the law. He agrees with Garang, though, that some reporters' reporting is unbalanced. They need better training, he says.
If you are a radio or a newspaper and you have program for politics, then you must have people who are well-versed. But telling the truth, what is beneficial to the public, what is good to the people?
Last month, a reporter based in Wau was arrested and accused of having contact with anti-government forces. The reporter is still in custody but has been transferred to Juba. His family has not heard from him. Also last month, security officials in Juba closed down a Catholic-run radio station after it aired a story about new fighting in Bantu. The government said that by giving the rebel side in that story, the radio station led listeners to believe that government forces had started the fighting. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Washington.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. Hong Kong's chief executive is calling for an immediate end to pro-democracy protests, even as activists threaten to expand their campaign of civil disobedience. Chief Executive Lung Chung Ying said today he would not give in to the protesters' demand for his resignation or for greater democratic reforms. Afghanistan's new government has signed a long delayed security agreement with the United States to allow about 1,200 foreign troops to remain in Afghanistan after December 31st. National Security Advisor Hanif Atmar and U.S. Ambassador James Cunningham signed the deal in Kabul a day after Ashraf Ghani took over as Afghanistan's president. And finally, the director of the U.S. Secret Service is testifying before a U.S. House committee today about a major security breach at the White House earlier this month. Julia Pearson is facing tough questioning by lawmakers over the security breach, as well as several other embarrassing incidents involving the agency, which is responsible for protecting President Barack Obama and his family. And that's a look at today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni has replaced Prime Minister Amama Mbabazi after what analysts suggest was a growing enmity between these two major players within the National Resistance Movement political party. As Elizabeth Pollard reports from Kampala, there are rumbling that Mbabazi may challenge the long-serving president in the next elections.
For years, tensions have been reported between Ugandan President Museveni and his Prime Minister Amama Mbabazi. On September 19th, the president's office made public that Mbabazi would be replaced by former Minister of Health, Ruhakana Rugunda. Mbabazi received an outpouring of support on social media after the dismissal, although he described himself as actually very fine. Mbabazi remains the Secretary General for the country's leading political party, the National Resistance Movement, or NRM. During President Museveni's rise to power almost 30 years ago, Mbabazi played a crucial role as his right-hand man, fighting in the bush next to Museveni, and helping the NRM achieve popular support. According to political insiders, Mbabazi's intentions to run for president in 2016 caused sharp divisions within the party, which led directly to him being fired. However, government spokesperson Ofwana Opondo tells VOA his dismissal was in line with the party rules, which do not allow one person to serve both as prime minister and as secretary general.
In this particular case, we made a resolution way back in October 2010, and we said whoever is elected Secretary General of the party shall not hold any other full-time job in government. Indeed, when his name was brought up by the President as Prime Minister, we said we elected you Secretary General. Are you accepting the position of Prime Minister? He said yes. We said in that case, we require that you comply with the resolution. He said once I go through the necessary ratification by Parliament and I'm confirmed as Prime Minister, I will step down within 3 weeks. We have waited for him for 3 years.
Yet inside political circles, Mbabazi's intentions to run for president are anything but secret. Betty Kemia, the president of the Ugandan Federal Alliance Party, explains Mbabazi's current options within the NRM party are limited.
What is more likely for me too? He could patch up with the president. Because if he doesn't, the options are not good. The prospects are not good. At all. He could salvage his relationship with the president, buy some time, and reorganize himself. I think that would be a smart option. His future would depend on President Museveni. As long as you admit that you were wrong, and he was right, and you're sorry, and it's up to him to make or break you, he will take you back. But it's not likely that Mbabazi will say that.
Without mending this rift, Kemia speculates it's only a matter of time before Mbabazi is thrown out of the NRM entirely. The NRM vice chairperson for the East, Captain Mike Makula, has already publicly called on Mbabazi to resign. President Museveni gave a lively speech on September 28th, warning that the NRM was nothing to play around with and those who wanted to disrupt the party could go elsewhere. Although neither Mbabazi nor Mr. Museveni have directly stated their intentions for upcoming elections, if Mbabazi decides to run, he could be the first critical threat to President Museveni's power in 3 decades. Elizabeth Pola, VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with a little music, Mpikewa Nyambe by Malawian musician Lucas Banda. We have been listening to a test of Lucas Banda's music, Mpike Wanyambe. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.